What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and this week, because we have All-Star Week coming up, we have a very special guest. That is the one and only CeCe Sabathia. CeCe, thank you so much for taking the time today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I really don't want to talk too much about the Home Run Derby, but that is next week, July 13th, only on Netflix at 7 p.m. Eastern time. You got to check it out. And I want to talk about the times you didn't allow home runs. And really, I think the most underrated thing that you've done in your career, I know we talk about it loosely, but I think people forget that I believe it was four straight games that you had that was 3 days rest at the end of the 2008 season with the Milwaukee Brewers. And can you imagine anyone doing that now? No. How did you get through that? What are the things that you did to ensure that you could be healthy for that? And then, of course, also the playoff run after.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just, I was in a groove. You know, I had came off the season in 2007 where I was pitching every fifth day, no matter whether it was an off day, no matter whose start it was. So I just kind of stayed on that schedule of pitching every fifth day, got into a really good routine. In the first half of 2008, I was doing the same thing in Cleveland. And then we got down to the second half in Milwaukee, and we kind of ran out of starters. You know, Sheets had went down. Yeah. Giovanni was coming back off the knee injury. And we needed guys to pitch. And I went into the office, told Dale Swaim that I was going to pitch on 3 days rest. I had been used to doing it. I knew I had a good routine of you know, being able to pitch, take a day off, throw a flat ground, take a day off, and then pitch. So it was actually like a good route, kind of like good little routine to be in. And just felt like I was in the groove. I was telling somebody earlier, the only thing that got tiring was the mental aspect of it being my start day every third day, as opposed to every fifth day. Just going through that routine of waking up, you know, getting ready for the team that night, not eating, all the anxiety you get, you know, heading to the mound.
Yeah.
Was the only thing that I had to deal with. But physically, I felt phenomenal because the Cleveland Indians at the time had put me on a rotation where I was pitching every fifth day. So I just kind of got used to that routine.
Yeah, and did you feel that you had to do anything else to just recover in that way? I mean, you hear, if someone did that now, any pitcher, you take him in the majors right now and you say, cool, you're going on 3 days rest for the next month or so. There's no way. There's no way someone does that without some sort of injury at the end of it. And I can't imagine that you just did this. Okay, cool. I have this routine already. I can do that. I mean, brings so many questions just in. Were you not going max effort as much? Were you adjusting a little bit here and there? I mean, there must have been some things that changed massively for you to be okay at the end of that.
Yeah, there's no way you can go max effort if you're throwing, you know, basically every other day. You know, you're throwing flat ground or you're pitching. So it actually made it easier to be able to stay within my delivery, just trust my stuff and be able to just go out and try to attack the strike zone. You know, I didn't have to really try to overpower. The stuff was there. I just need to make sure that I was in the strike zone and getting swings early in the count so I can keep my pitch count down. That was the biggest thing, was like trying to keep the pitch counts down during the game so that I could recover. But like, you know, the next day I would do a long cardio, 45 minutes on the Stairmaster or do some running. The next day I would run sprints. The day I would throw flat ground, and the next day I would take off. And like I said, I mean, I was 28 years old and just, you know, ready to go.
Yeah. And what's really funny for me is that I'm just spoiled now. I have StatCast. I have my own dashboard where I just see every single pitch everyone throws. I even correct sometimes the StatCast.
Me too. Me too.
You know, right? It's like, no, man, that's a cutter. I don't care what you say. That guy's throwing a cutter. And actually with you, I see that, you know, Pitch FX came around in like 2007, 2008, right? So I'm trying to remember exactly what CeCe Sabathia used to throw. And I go, wait a second. I'm pretty sure that they classified your cutter starting in 2017, but I'm seeing the dip of your four-seamer velocity, and I'm thinking, like, you're essentially throwing a cutter for years, if not from the very beginning. Can you give us any insight into what you were throwing back then and how it changed across your career?
Yeah, so my ball just naturally cut when I was younger. I honestly wish I would have learned the cutter when I was throwing harder, but I remember Ken Harvey. You remember big Ken Harvey that played for Kansas City? He was talking to me one day. We were out to dinner. He was like, "Man, you always throwing me that cutter." I was like, "What are you talking about, cutter?" I was like, "I don't throw a cutter. That's a four seamer." He's like, "I'm telling you, that ball is cutting every single time." And you know, it was just one of those things where I couldn't see it, but the hitters could see it. But yeah, I mean, even so, the slider that you would have saw in 2007, 2008 with the pitch effects, that's what I called a cutter. When I went to the bullpen, I learned how to throw that pitch as a cutter. It ended up being an 82 mile an hour slider. And then I learned a cutter later in like 14 and 15. I learned it from Andy, Mo, and Billy Connors when I was in New York, true cutter. But I think my ball just always had that natural cut on it. Like I said, Big Harv was like, man, you're throwing me that cutter. I was like, I don't throw a cutter, bro. Like, that's just a four-seamer.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like how Max Free, when he throws his four-seamer inside to right-handers, he just has that natural cut, and sometimes it gets more of the two-seam movement. At least that's what Juan Soto said about Max Fried's fastballs in general.
Yeah.
And like, did you... Okay, so when it comes to your pitch development then, right?
And see, Max probably wouldn't even know that.
Yeah, right. There you go. Is it, you know, did you really feel like you had the same kind of arsenal until that cutter changed? I mean, was it really just fastball, breaking ball, whatever that cutter was for you for a long time?
No, I mean, I think I learned my whole arsenal in the big leagues, right? Like when I first got drafted, I was 90 to 93. They taught me how to throw a four seamer. Now I'm throwing 98 to 100. You know, I threw like a big looping curveball when I first got up, had a decent changeup. Learned my changeup really my first year, kind of perfected it maybe around 2005, 2006. The second half of 2006 is when I learned my slider. So I really like learned in the big leagues. And if you look at my early career, like it would be flashes of like, oh, you can see where he's going to be good. But I just didn't have the pitch arsenal. I didn't have the weapons yet to be able to get the outs that I needed. When I got to Milwaukee in 2008, started throwing the two seamer. Mike Maddox was like, hey, I want to get some swings early in the count. You know, let's try to throw this two-seamer. So my second bullpen, I went there, I started, and then in my bullpen, he told me that. So we threw the two-seamer. I threw a couple in the bullpen. I saw it move. I was like, oh, this thing is nasty. Took it into a game, and Ty Wigginton hit the first one off the scoreboard.
Oh, no.
but in my mind, I was like, oh, I seen it move. So I just started using it. I was using it to lefties. I was using it to righties to get swings early in the count. So my arsenal changed, and you know, I really learned on the job, like throughout my 19 years. I never stopped, you know, learning and kind of perfecting my arsenal and my craft.
Yeah, and like now you see the guys these days who just do just everything at times. And do you get a little bit jealous? Is there something that you're saying, oh man, dude, if I were 24 in the league right now, this is what I'd be doing?
You know, I just wish that we had like the TrackMan and all the different stuff. Like it took me a year and a half to learn that cutter. If we had all the technology that we have now, it would have took me 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
just to be able to trust it, to understand it, to know the numbers. But yeah, I mean, you know, I probably would have been able to learn my slider quicker, you know, all those different things with the technology that they have now. But, you know, I'm happy the way my career went and the way that things were back then. And, you know, being able to learn, like I said, from Billy Connors, from Mariano, from Andy, you know, Pettit, you know, that's the best way to learn, you know, how to throw these pitches, how to get the knowledge. And, you know, I'm glad and blessed that I was able to be a part of that organization for as long as I was.
Yeah. I mean, as a, you know, I'm from Brooklyn. I like to say that I'm a Yankee fan because I want to be happy in life. So I appreciate you coming for that. That was an amazing time. Now, a question we ask everybody here is around your career. Sorry, over the entirety that you had, is there one specific pitch that you remember the most? And you cannot say the one that you threw at Jesus Sucre.
there was a pitch, and I think in 2000 and. Maybe 11 that I threw at the end of a game against Tampa. It was a complete game right before the All-Star break. Fastball, 98 miles an hour, right down the middle. It's just something that I always remember finishing that game off. I can't remember who the hitter was, but he had been fouling off a bunch of pitches. And I was able to reach back and get one. It was 98 right down the middle, fastball. And it was probably cutting a little bit. Got a swing and miss and threw the complete game. It was the last game before the All-Star break.
Oh man. And it's just that great feeling. It's just amazing. What is like the worst one that you threw? Like, for example, you talked to Nelson Figueroa and he talks about a mound visit where they told him to throw a slider and he didn't have a slider. So he tried to throw a hard curveball and it was a grand slam after that to Moises Alou. Was there one of those?
Yeah, I got a bunch of those.
Oh yeah.
Joe Girardi came out and made me walk the bases loaded. And I gave up a home run and Carlos Pena fastball. That was on opening day 1 year. I definitely remember that. But the one I remember more is back when I was still throwing my curveball. I threw Prince. I hung Prince a curveball, 1-0 curveball that he hit into the upper deck. We were supposed to go to dinner that night. And after he hit the homer, I kind of left him in the parking lot. I was like, man, I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, man, I can still see him kind of like balancing on his back foot after swinging at that pitch right now. Just like looking at it, you know? But so, and across the career, you've had a lot of different coaches. I mean, a lot of different guidance. As you're saying, of course, Andy Pettit, they taught you, those guys, Mo, taught you the cutter. Were there other little things like that, maybe not necessarily a pitch type, but some words of advice, anything along your track that you really hold to this day?
I mean, I think just having a chance to play with those, that caliber of guy, right? Like Mo, Andy, you know, when I had got to New York, I had already won the Cy Young and, you know, I was coming in as, you know, the highest paid pitcher in baseball and, you know, just to be able to fall in line behind those guys and kind of follow what they did. They had already had 4 rings, you know, and they were still working harder than ever, you know, they were hungrier than ever. And to be able to come into that locker room and kind of fall in line behind those guys, learn the culture, learn what it is to be a Yankee and put on those pinstripes is definitely a blessing.
Yeah. And really, what's next for CC Sabathia? I mean, I mean, R2 C2 is just amazing. I love it. And now, of course, you're going to be part of the team hosting the Home Run Derby at Netflix July 13th at 7 p.m. Is that the kind of thing that you want to be doing moving forward? Or are there other ambitions that, you know, we'll see from you in the future?
Yeah, I'll take it as it comes, right? Like, I did the Netflix deal, signed, you know, we're doing the opening day game, which was great. The Yankees and the Giants calling. The Home Run Derby should be fun. I mean, obviously, as a kid growing up, it was the funnest part of All-Star Weekend was watching the Home Run Derby. So to be a part of that telecast is fun. And then we have the Field of Dreams game in August. So to be a part of that, to be a part of what Netflix is doing is great. I have a show on NBC every Wednesday, MLB according to CC. That's a lot of fun. So I just keep it light, man. I don't want anything that I have to be at. I want to be able to go to the golf course whenever I want, take a trip whenever I want, and you know, kind of live that way. So it's been a lot of fun to be retired.
There you go. And last question I've got for you, because thank you so much for your time. I think one of the most interesting things about your career is the conversation about you. You know, you're able to lose a lot of weight, and then you realize I don't have the same velocity in my fastball. I have to adjust this. I have to change it. I need to get back to it. I that always was so strange and so interesting to me. And I'm curious if you had any more insight into that process, that thought, you know. When did it really click for you that you needed to change this because it just wasn't the same?
I think like right away, like I lost the weight that 1 year. I got down to 260 and I came back to spring training. I was throwing like 84. And I mean, I think everybody, even the organization was like, hey, go eat a cheeseburger. You know what I'm saying? So I think for me, we figured out, you know, it's best for me to pitch between 295 and 305 was like a sweet spot. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I would get a little too much in and out, maybe a couple of Wendy's burgers. I'd be up to like 325 and then I would get in trouble. But when I was like 305 to 295 is when I was at my best.
Man. And like when you're throwing though, are you feeling like when you do that, are you just feeling like when you land on your front foot, you just don't have enough behind it anymore? Like you were really reliant on the kind of, as the fall comes down, everything going with you in that momentum. Is that what that was?
Yeah, I just had never been that size, right? So I didn't know where my arm was in space. I didn't know where my body was. So it was hard to kind of figure out, like, being a third of your actual size, you know, how to pitch with that. So, you know, I've just always been a bigger guy and you know, always been a good athlete in that. So, you know, once they figured that out, you know, it was better for both of them.
I mean, clearly this was my problem because I was way too skinny in college and I didn't make it. Just all through college, it's like, man, I'm only top in 84. I can't do this anymore. I need to eat more Wendy's, clearly. But no, really, such a pleasure interviewing you today, CC. You look great now. It's also kind of just a testament. Like, I could do this, guys. All right. I just need to eat the Wendy's, please.
No doubt.
Really, thank you so much for being here, guys. Remember, of course, July 13th, 7 p.m., only on Netflix. You'll see CC Sabathia for the Home Run Derby. Go check it out. Cannot wait for it. CC, thank you so much for being here today.
No problem, bro. Thank you.
Take care.